And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Our next guest, our very special guest, is Mr. Zachary King. He is a former Satanist, 26 years as a former Satanist. He's got a lot of the inside scoop about what goes on inside the Satanistic cabal, the Satanist cabal. And the reason we asked him to come on is to explain things, because, you know, it's one thing to hear, for example, let me just use this as an example, that in some, not all perhaps, but some Planned Parenthood locations where abortions are performed, some are performed as ritualistic sacrifices, unbeknownst to perhaps the individual that's undergoing the abortion. And people look at that or hear that, and they tend to roll their eyes and say, oh, you're just full of it, and this is fake news. Of course, hence, you know, but no. So what we need to do is we need to talk with people with the experience. We need to talk with people who are credible with the experience, and not just that, but have given that lifestyle up, or otherwise given their lives over to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, become born again, and can talk about it with authority. And that is our next guest. Before we get to our next guest, folks, TexasReady.com, you know, they've got the greatest seed banks in the world. Have you heard of TexasReady.net? If not, you need to. Look, in this time of relative calm at the moment, you need to get yourself prepared. And part of the preparation, a key part, is seed kits. TexasReady.net have regionally appropriate, open pollinated heirloom seeds in their seed kits. And you know, most seed banks don't take into account geographic differences. They don't have certified seeds. Well, Texas Ready believes their clients, that's you deserve the best, and they provide the best. Their customers, our listeners, our viewers are worth it. The germination rate on their seeds is outstanding. If you don't know how to garden, Texas Ready has several excellent reference books that help you grow plenty of nutrient-dense food, starting plants from seedlings and save seeds, how to save seeds correctly, and protect the genetics so you don't inadvertently create hybrids yourselves. And we've met the owners of Texas Ready, Lucinda Bailey. She's called the Seed Lady for good reason, because she knows her seeds. Folks, go to TexasReady.net. That's TexasReady.net. Do yourself a favor. Make an investment into seeds. The people in power have been doing it. Preppers have been doing it. You, please, do it correctly. Go to TexasReady.net. That's TexasReady.net, where they've got 80-plus varieties of vegetables and fruits, including 8 dual-purpose herbs for culinary and medicinal purposes. That's TexasReady.net, TexasReady.net. Now, before we bring our guest on, Zachary King, let me just say this. This is the eve of the inauguration. Ladies and gentlemen, there will be, and I ask for the indulgence of Zachary King, too, because of the fluid situation in Washington, D.C., we might have to cut in with some news updates throughout the program. And I say that because already it looks like tear gas has been dispersed. Apparently, it's been verified via RT. We're getting it on social networking feeds. Various social networking feeds on the ground. Stuart Rhodes last hour was talking about attending the deplorable, things that are happening outside of the National Press Club at that location. So all of this combined, the fluid nature of the situation, we might have to break in and interrupt the process. Interrupt the interview, but hopefully that won't be the case. But we have on with us, or do we have on with us? Okay. Well, let me check. Zachary King, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, all right. We have you on audio, not on video. We just can't see you, so not sure what.
Well, I'm not worth looking at, so yeah, it's all right.
That's okay. Well, first of all, welcome to the Hagmann and the Hagmann Report. If you don't mind, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because I've heard your interviews, with Rick Wiles and others, and you've got an amazing story. If you don't mind, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. But, you know, first I'd like to say that, it's a pleasure being here.
Okay.
And I've also noticed that when fake news happens, it's only in reference to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Only the Democrats get fake news. When Republicans have news, it's always gossip.
Isn't that interesting?
It's gossip or it's news. Or it sounds suspicious. We'll have to look into it. But when it's Democrats, it's always fake news.
We mean when it's about Democrats, it's always fake news. Or
they always
on the left.
Classify
because every topic that comes, like Pizzagate, for example, fake news. It didn't affect Republicans, so it was fake news. You know, a lot of the stuff that comes out on WikiLeaks, fake news. Well, it's about Hillary Clinton. Oh, it's fake news. She would never do anything like that. But if it came out, if it comes out when Trump's in office, you know, it's going to be like, well, we'll have to investigate this further. It's like, really? How come you don't just jump on the fake news bandwagon there? Well, because he's not a Democrat.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hope we can get into your take on spirit cooking since you brought up Pizzagate. You know, we had talked a lot yesterday about Pizzagate. People think that we've dropped that subject, anything but dropping it. The, in my view anyway, Mr. King, that I'll say this, from an investigative point of view, the circumstantial evidence, although nothing it can be, is, and I'm not alleging any criminal activity here, let me be clear, but given the level of an amount of circumstantial evidence or circumstantial documentation that's been shown, I certainly believe an investigation is warranted based on what we've seen. Your thoughts?
I agree, but I also believe that before a real investigation would be launched, probably the principal players will all be dead. You know, we've already seen a key player turn up dead.
Right.
And then the person that would have known how he died, you know, the medical examiner, died of suspicious causes. You know, like he was poisoned.
Good point.
And you're talking about Andrew Breitbart and the...
No, where are you?
Yes.
Breitbart, and, okay. Okay.
You know, and I would think that other things would happen like that as well. If the truth started to come to light, more people would have to die so that the truth would not be revealed.
Well, you were on the inside of this whole satanic mess, right? I mean...
Right. You know, I don't know if you... Did you ever hear the interview of Hillary Clinton's old bodyguard? You know, he used to say that he would take her out to California for monthly satanic meetings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff really happens. I mean, I was on, I've been on multiple interviews where I've mentioned that, you know, Bohemian Grove is a male-only facility, and I'd seen Hillary Clinton there back in 92. She snuck on the grounds to have a conversation with Bill. And she got escorted off by security, but she made it all the way to the inner sanctum of the group. You know, and it's like she wasn't hiding that. I mean, she was wearing like a pantsuit or something, but still looks like a woman's, you know, as close as we can tell. And you know, she marched her way in like she owned the place.
Interesting. Zachary, we'll get back to, if we have time, the Pizzagate, what's going on here. If we can start, I'd like to start with, your testimony. I've listened to a few of your interviews and you have a pretty interesting and incredible testimony as to how this all began in your life and where it took you. If we can, let's go to the beginning and what interested you or what caught your attention and led you down the path that you went down?
Sure. Well, I had watched every fantasy science fiction movie that I could, you know, back in the 70s that dealt with magic. And I wanted magic to be real. I wanted, you know, I could see people levitate, which to me, you know, when you're 10 years old, levitation is flying, you know, and I wanted these things to be so true. You know, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie, you know, and I wanted magic to be the greatest thing. And to me, it was the greatest thing in the world, but I wanted it to be real. And I talked to my parents and they said, no, magic wasn't real. This wasn't something you could do. Now remember that there's 33 verses in the Bible that all deal with magic or something magic related. Well, why would the Bible tell you not to do something if it was impossible for you to do? And so I had watched all these movies, and at 10 years old, my first day of school, this kid came up to me and he said, hey, meet us in the bathroom at the first break. All right. So it was like 10:20 was the first break, and I went in the bathroom. There was 49 other kids crammed into the bathroom, and they said, okay, we're going to turn out the lights in the bathroom, and we're all going to chant Bloody Mary over and over again. And if you do it right, there's a spirit of a burn victim that will appear in the mirror. And so we did the Bloody Mary chant. All the lights were out. Suddenly, we saw this scary face in the mirror. 49 kids ran screaming from the bathroom. One kid, the stupidest one, I mean me, decided that he would stay because, well, that was just cool. I just chanted Bloody Mary a few times and a scary face appeared in the mirror. That's the coolest thing in the world. You know, and I started doing that every day at school, and then there were some kids that got hurt really bad, so they sent notes home stating that if we got caught doing this, we'd be suspended for 3 days. I didn't want to get suspended for 3 days, so I started playing it at home, which was even better for me because then I could play it in the morning. When I got home in the afternoon, I could play it again. I could play it at night before I went to bed. If I got up during the night, I could play it again. I could play it all week and on the weekends. And I'm just having so much fun with this. And, you know, at some point, you start to realize maybe this is a magic spell. As well, Dungeons & Dragons came out in 1974, and this is 1976. I'm playing campaigns pretty much every weekend, and I'm always like the wizard in that. And after a while, after, you know, doing spells there and then doing this Bloody Mary thing and realizing, you know, this is probably magic, I had to try a magic spell in real life. I had to see, you know, is this something you can really do? Can I benefit from this? You know, so, and I was thinking, okay.
Sorry for interrupting, Mr. King. I just had a question. So while you were doing this, you talked about the letter that was sent home to parents. Did your parents or anybody in your family know that you were doing this?
No, no. And you know, my dad had been a drill sergeant in the Marines, and I was scared of my dad. He was a really big guy. You know, so he called me into the den, and he was like, you know, in his most loving tone, have you ever done this? You know, and I was like, no. You know, I was like, you know, I wouldn't have told him the truth. He could have put a gun to my head, and I wouldn't have told him the truth, because he'd have pulled the trigger. You know, he was a scary man. He was big and burly and just gruff. You know, my parents had no idea that I was doing this kind of stuff.
And, you know, kids that you were associated with and friends with who were also doing these things, I guess the reason I ask this is because, you know, a lot of times you have parents who are overprotective, you have parents who don't care, and then parents sometimes encourage kids to do this, and there's, you know, ancestral ties, you know, where Satanism is concerned, and you know, families do it together in a lot of cases. So I just kind of wanted to understand, right, how you were raised, if that impacted you going down this road.
My parents would have been overly protective had they known that I was not telling the truth. I think they just naturally assumed, because they took me to church every Sunday, so they assumed I was a natural, good, church-going boy. I was only going to church because they took me. You know, if they'd have said, oh, we're not going to church this Sunday, I would not have complained at all. I didn't want to be there. I was just there because I was made to go.
So what initially attracted you to this was the capabilities or things that you were able to do that were different from the norm. So it wasn't a desire to be dark or to go down a road of Satanism.
It wasn't a desire of, well, you know, in the movies, Satan was this really scary guy. He was the bad guy. And I didn't want to be the bad guy. I didn't want to be the Christopher Lee character that was, you know, out to kill whoever he could or do evil things. But, you know, if I could do a few little sleight of hand or say a couple of spells and suddenly I'm worth money or stuff, or I have a girlfriend, or, you know, somebody loves me, or, you know, whatever my interpretation of love is at 10 years old, then I thought that would be cool. You know, if I could levitate, if I could do something and then find gold, or be given something that no one else could get. If I could change my grades or suddenly make straight A's but not have to study, that would be an awesome thing.
So having advantages in the world and in your personal life from worldly or material things was kind of the drive behind what got you going.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the same things that drive us now, that drive people now to do magic. I mean, power, greed, money, pride. You know, the reason the devil fell was pride. You know, and that's pretty much every sin we commit today is pride.
Absolutely. Mr. King, if you want to continue with your testimony, you were talking about the games that you played and the early stages of what led you down the road to becoming a Satanist.
Right. So, you know, after doing this magic for so long and thinking that this must be what I'm actually doing is magic, you know, I decided that, I don't want to hurt my teacher. I don't like the pop quizzes that happen every Friday, but I don't want to hurt the teacher. I don't want my PE coach to die, but I would like to do something that proves that magic either works or it doesn't. Because if it doesn't work, I'm wasting my time. And if it does work, then I want to start reaping some of these benefits other than just enjoying a game here and there. And I did a spell for money, and the next day I went out and I found a can of tennis balls with a $5 bill in it. And I thought, all right, this is cool, but this could have been a coincidence. Somebody had to find that. So the next Friday I did the spell again. Saturday I went out and played, and I found a $10 bill on the side of the road. I was like, all right, 8 days, $15, we're getting better. But, you know, at this rate, I'm going to nickel and dime my way up to being a millionaire. I need to do something differently. So I went in the bathroom at home, and I did my money spell, and then I stopped it, and I did the Bloody Mary chant. And then when the demonic face showed up, I made sure that the demon knew I was doing a spell for money. And the next day I went out and I found what looked like Monopoly money rolled up tight in rubber bands. And later that night, when everybody's asleep and I'm under the sheets, got a flashlight in my mouth, and I'm unraveling everything. And it looked like Monopoly money because I'd never seen a $100 bill. And when I unraveled all the rubber bands, I had 10 $100 bills and $1,000. And I knew absolutely, positively, that magic was real. I was going to do this spell every day for the rest of my life.
That's very interesting. The spells that you were doing, you were obviously young. You talked about, you know, doing the Bloody Mary game. Where did you learn how to do spells and differentiate between, you know, a money spell or at such a young age?
At such a young age, most of there were books at the library that dealt with doing spells. And then there were the D&D books, the early gaming books had spells in them. And then the Bloody Mary thing was just taught by other kids at the school.
Okay. So you got to a point where you understood that what you were doing was yielding results, positive results for you.
Yes.
So did that lead you to increase what you were attempting to do?
Once I learned that magic was real and that, you know, all these things that I was watching on TV for years were true, then I knew that I had power and knowledge that no adult had, because all adults said you couldn't do this stuff. And I know that sometimes, as a kid, sometimes adults say stuff and you know they couldn't possibly know everything. You know, they just couldn't. Somebody's gotta have all the information, but you know it's not your parents. And I was convinced of that because they're telling me as well. My Baptist preacher told me that magic wasn't something that could really be done. You know, and here it is, I'm doing magic in real life, so these people are wrong. So I have power and knowledge that they don't have. So I was branching out, trying, you know, new things, new spells, seeing what would work and what wouldn't. You know, I continued doing those things, but never did I... remember too that I didn't know that there was stuff in the Bible that told you not to do this stuff. I never thought of myself as evil. I never thought, oh, you know, I'm going over to the dark side now. I didn't realize that it was bad.
And that's understandable. Especially without the knowledge of the scriptures and, you know, this is something you're doing alone. You're not, you know, attempting to just, as you said, you know, move to the dark side. It seemed like, from the way you described it, you were trying to do something different, you know, something you found interesting and kind of went at it alone and found results, and which probably piqued your interest more. And, I mean, I can wrap my head around the progression, how that would work mentally. Now, from the time, you know, doing the things with the money and the games that you were playing at home, how did that transition into actually becoming part of a Satanist organization?
Well, when I was 11 years old, I was the victim of a sexual assault at school. It was at the hands of a female teacher. And she told me that this was my idea. I wanted to do it. I enjoyed myself. And if I told anybody, I would get in trouble because it was my idea. And I believed, you know, she was an authority figure at school. And obviously, why would she lie to me? So I believed her and I withdrew further into myself. And the only thing that gave me more comfort and solace was to do magic. When I was 12 years old, a kid that I used to play D&D with came back to our D&D group, and we thought he had moved away. And it turned out that the kid was a satanic recruiter. We didn't know that. And I wouldn't have even believed that at 12 years old. I mean, you're telling me a 12-year-old kid is coming back to my group to recruit me for the devil? I just, that's not something you could have gotten me to buy into. And he told me about this group that plays D&D every weekend, and they think that magic is real. Well, I play D&D every weekend, and I know magic is real. So I thought, I'm going to go check these guys out. And they've got a huge house on the good section of town. They've got an in-ground swimming pool. They have an in-ground barbecue pit. Not only do they have the in-ground barbecue pit, but you can, any night that you want barbecue, they'll just go out there and, you know, fire up the grill and make you something. You know, at my house, you can have three meals a day and a snack if mom's in a good mood. Over here, you can have snacks all day long. You know, if you wanted to have Snicker bars for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you could do that. You know, so whatever you want, you can overindulge in anything. There's no such thing as overindulging. You know, I was just getting into rock and roll. You know, I, in 1978, which is when I was 12 years old, Kiss was like the biggest band in the world. And they had autographed guitars, autographed photos, autographed posters, albums, movie posters, thousands of movies. You know, at my house, I could watch a G-rated movie, so I watched lots of Disney. But I found out being there that they had PG-rated movies, movies rated GP, which was really strange. We don't have that now. R-rated movies, X-rated movies, triple X-rated movies, triple X-rated movies with kids in at my age. And they told me that, you know, what was stolen from me when I was 11 was horrible, and that should have never happened to me. But now it was my chance to get my power back. Another lie that Satan sells us, because none of us have power. But now I lost my power, and now I can get it back. And no one can tell me no. I can tell anybody else no. I can have sex with anybody I want to, and they'll even film it. So I can watch these things anytime I want. So I'm being re-victimized every weekend. But I don't realize that. I think I'm the luckiest boy in the world because I get to have sex now anytime I want. And this was a principal player, this entire event. This was a satanic coven, but I didn't know that. I thought it was just a fun group that got together and did stuff.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's interesting, you know, how you describe that, how that happens. You know, you experiencing that, the sexual assault and being interested in magic, and then all of a sudden a person with, I guess you'd call it, say, the right satanic connections comes into your life, brings you into an environment that you would enjoy, because as you said, you know, at home you had restrictions and you know, do's and don'ts, and when you go to this other place, not only are they telling you to take your power back and get your power back, but basically have free reign to have fun and do what you want. That's basically every kid's dream for the most part, and teenager's dream. So
right.
And it's very seductive, if you will, for the mind of a younger person to have those.
Yeah, you know, also, you know, this is 1978, so there's no internet. There's no place to look stuff up like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you went to the library and you know, there was also the, you had to be cautious as a 12-year-old because, you know, if you're at the library and you're looking up certain sections of books, librarian will come over. She has the entire library memorized. She knows what you're looking at and she'll tell you not to look in that section. That's bad. You shouldn't, you know, care about those kind of subjects, you know, because back then adults would kind of like, you know, look out after you. Now it's like the opposite of that. You know, it's like there's no restrictions on so many computers and we can look up anything we want.
Yeah, times have definitely changed and the internet can be used for gathering knowledge and intelligence, or it can be used to further each and every individual's own paranoia and delusion. It's all a matter of how you use it. Folks, we're talking with Zachary King. Go to his website, allsaintsministry.org. That's allsaintsministry.org. He's going to be with us for the next three segments till the end of the show, and we're going to continue to hear his testimony and from becoming a Satanist at 13 years old and through his whole experience and what happened there to being saved. So we're going to be right back with Zachary King to get into this more right after this short message. Stay with us.
Folks, to this edition of the Hagman and the Hagman Report, our guest is Zachary King. On this eve before the inauguration, just to let people know, folks, we're going to be live from 11 to 2 tomorrow, covering the events of the inauguration right here on YouTube Live. Just feel free to pop in. We're going to be covering what goings on there with respect to what we believe is perhaps one of the most significant events in significant presidential transitions in modern history. And that's because of the anarchists and the communist infiltration. You heard Stuart Rhodes earlier. But just to remind everyone, 11 a.m. Eastern to 2 p.m. Eastern live. We'll be here now. Zachary King is our guest. Before we get back to Zachary, folks, let me ask you a question. If you are you prepped? If you're not, you should be. One of the preps, the most important preps you need to have, is a unit to cook your food on that does not rely on fuel, because fuel is expendable. You need something. Well, you need the Minuteman rocket stove. Just takes a little bit of wood, about a tenth of what a normal fire would take. It's directed. The heat is directed to an area, a cooktop area. It gets as hot as a conventional stove would. Yet you can set it on a picnic table because the outside only reaches about 200 degrees in temperature. You'll notice it creates, when used efficiently, it creates hardly any smoke whatsoever if giving away your location and or smoke bothers you. The Minuteman stove is self-contained. It seals airtight for travel and storage. It's the only self-contained rocket stove on the market. It's a 50 caliber ammo can design. It features a lid that has got a rubber seal and a carry handle. It weighs about 14 pounds, and it is an absolute necessity for your preps. This is the Cadillac of rocket stoves. Don't go anywhere else. Don't buy anything else. MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com. When you go there, check out their array of fire starters. You've got to check this out. Spend some time at the website, MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com. I'm going to turn it back over to Joe.
Our guest this evening is Zachary King. If you want to visit his website, you go to AllSaintsMinistry.org. That's AllSaintsMinistry.org. And we were talking before the break, Zachary, of the transition from performing magic to being recruited by a person who was your age. I think you said 12 years old at the time. to being recruited into this satanic coven by the age of 13.
Yeah, so I was, a kid told me, another kid in the coven told me that I was a member of a satanic coven, and I just laughed it off. And then a couple of days later, because it kind of bothered me, I went up to one of the adults I trusted, and I was like, hey, you know, you're going to laugh, but I heard this was a satanic coven. And I was waiting for him to just bust a guy. And he just looked at me very serious, and he said, it is. And, you know, my heart dropped into my stomach, and I was like, am I a member? And he said, no, would you like to be? And, you know, I associated not being a member with losing my privileges. I mean, like, I get drunk almost every day. And at this time, I think you have to be 19 to buy booze. You know, and I'm 12. You know, I'm taking illegal drugs every day that I don't know where to get. I'm looking at pornography every day, which you have to be 18 to buy. I'm smoking cigarettes every day, which you got to be 18 to buy. And, you know, I'm having sex every weekend, you know, and if I quit my coven, I'm not going to get any of these things anymore. So, you know, I was absolutely like, yeah, I'd love to be a member. And he goes, well, you know, if you join, you'll have even more fun. So, I asked, you know, how many steps are there? What do I have to do? And I was told there were 13 steps, and I'd done almost everything already. What I had left to do was slice my left thumb, bleed onto a document, and sign it in three places in my own blood. The blood of Jesus washes away all sin, but not mine. Jesus died for everyone, but not me. And on the final page, I sell my soul to the devil. I got to tell you that it's impossible to sell your soul to the devil because you can't sell what you don't own. But at 13 years old, you're not the sharpest tack. So I believe that I had sold my soul. Then you come into a room. My entire coven was there. They were present for this. I was wearing a white robe, signifying that I was losing my innocence. I was baptized full submersion in a vat of human blood, pig's blood, and human urine. I come out, go into another room and take a shower and change into a black robe, signifying I've been baptized into a world of evil. I sit on a chair and I'm given a crucifix inside of a wheel. They read off the document I signed the night before. I show them my thumb to show that it's my thumb that I cut and it's my blood. Then I spin the crucifix upside down, signifying human sacrifice, and I break the arms downward, signifying denouncing Christ. And what you're left with, if you've got any imagination at all, is a peace sign. They then take your document you signed and intertwine it with this. They say that that gets forever locked in a vault and is forever tied to your soul. And then you have a party celebrating that you're now a Satanist. But the reality of the party is that you're celebrating that one day you're going to die and go to hell.
So when you, the progression from understanding it was a satanic coven to becoming a member, you talked about the thought about losing the privileges or what you were able to do. Were there any, when you were informed that it was a satanic coven and you could become a member, were there any spiritual thoughts that went through your mind since you were somebody who was attended church with your family? Or was that more of not a concern?
I attended a Southern Baptist church. My parents, I like to say that they were devout Baptists. That means that they never went to church. They took me and my brother every Sunday. The only day I ever saw my parents in church was the day I got baptized when I was 11. So I never saw them in church before that or after that. You know, it wasn't like a solid church-going family. My brother liked church. I didn't. To me, it was a chore. So finding out that at my Baptist church, Jesus defeated the devil 2,000 years ago on the cross. Therefore, the devil is no threat to us now. And the devil is afraid of the Baptist church. So what that really means, what that really equates to, because if that's what a church thinks, is that the devil can attack them all day long and they'll never believe it's the devil. So he can just, you know, he can just attack them as much as he wants because they'll never believe who it is that's really attacking them. They'll just think they're having bad luck, or that's just the way life is, and these things just happen. You know, which I imagine was a lot of the things that happened there. But, you know, the realities of what was happening in my Southern Baptist church, we had 12 deacons. 11 of my deacons were Freemasons in town. Those same 11 deacons were also members of my Satanic Covenant.
Sadly, that's how it works sometimes.
If I can just interject one thing here, and thank you, Zachary King, for your indulgence here, for indulging me. I just want to let our listeners know we are monitoring multiple feeds from New York City, Washington, D.C., and then one general feed elsewhere. We know that this is the eve of the inauguration. We know there are multiple disturbances planned. We see things happening in New York City. We see things happening in Washington, D.C. If there is anything of significance, you've got a choice. You can listen to this program where you are getting some really interesting, relevant information. And the information that Zachary King will be providing about current day events, to me, you know, you can't get any better than this, because he's been there, he's done it, he's got the proverbial t-shirt. So we'll keep an eye on things for you. You don't have to change the dial, you don't have to change the channel. If anything does happen, we'll interrupt. And I just want to let everyone know and reassure everyone that we got you covered. But in the meantime, a fascinating story by Zachary King, former Satanist. And it's going to be interesting, too, to bring all of this together next hour. I'm so interested in the progression of this interview. As you're interviewing him, Joe, the progression of this is just fantastic. So go ahead and continue. I just wanted to reassure our viewers and listeners that we're on top of things here.
All right. Sure. So we were talking about becoming a member of the Satanic Coven. And not only that, you just mentioned... we were talking, the last thing you said is how 11 out of 12 deacons in your Baptist church were not only Freemasons, but also members of the Satanic Coven as well. And I was commenting on how that's a lot more common than people think. You know, one of the main things that the Kingdom of Darkness will do is infiltrate churches. And not only that, they manage to find their ways into positions of power in those churches for different reasons, for abuse or for, to drive people away. And it's interesting you mentioned the Baptist church you went to believe that the devil was defeated. And it just marvels my mind how a church that's supposed to be Bible-based can err so far away from Scripture. That's just amazing.
Well, I think on, you know, if you look at the, they had some of the basics correct. I mean, the devil is defeated, and he was defeated by Jesus on the cross. And, you know, eventually, you know, the ones of us that are believers are going to find ourselves in heaven. But, you know, the devil's still allowed to get in quite a few licks, and he still leads a lot of us astray, and he still does a lot of satanic attack every day around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, it's just... Certain people get these ideas in their head, and you know you can't convince them otherwise that it should go a different way, or that it might not even that it might go a different way than what they believe. You know, they think that absolutely this is how it is, this is how it's written in stone, and you know it'll never change from this. And because they don't have the flexibility to look at the situation and think, wait a minute, maybe that's not exactly correct. Because my cousin, for example, my cousin believes that all the tribulation, all the attack on the church will happen after we all get lifted up and the rapture happens and we all go away. I said, okay, if that's true, then what's happening to the 3 million Christians around the world that are being killed by ISIS, ISIL, North Korea, and China? So you can't just explain that way. You know, it's like they're going through their tribulation now. You know, and he's like, oh, well, I guess I'll have to rethink that. Well, now that he's rethought it, he comes back and he says, you know, those people must not be Christians. Like, think, okay, so it's normal people that are dying. It's non-Christians that are dying at the hands of people that think they're Christians, so they're killing them anyway. Your argument's not holding any water. But he's able to make that argument because that goes against what he believes.
Yeah, and two scriptures come to mind. One is about not being ignorant about the devil's devices. And the second one is where it says that no weapon formed against us shall prosper. It does not say that there won't be attempts and disruptions and weapons formed against you. You're going to have to go through some things sometimes, but if you hold strong to your faith, you'll be okay. But you're still going to have to go right through those and walk those things out. And to just completely disregard the devil's ability to disrupt and cause trouble in the lives of believers and non-believers is something I hope people hear and recognize and take a closer look at if you believe it can't happen. So back to your testimony. You, where you left off was the ritual, your induction into the Satanic Coven. Anything change majorly after that, after your becoming a Satanist?
I got to learn not just my own magic, but I got to learn, like, everybody in the coven did magic at that time, and I got to learn how they did their spells and things. When I was 14, I was told that there was going to be a sex party at a female coven member's house. The female coven member was, like, over 18 or 19, and this would be, like, all the males, like, 12 to 15 years old. And, you know, and the purpose was to get this woman pregnant, and then we were going to do an abortion like 9 months later. And I said, cool. And I went home because I had to look up the word abortion. I had no idea what that meant. And, you know, I looked it up in the dictionary at home, and there was the word abortion wasn't in there. And I went to the library, and they had like two or three books on abortion, and they're all like 2 or 3 inches thick. 14 years old. And if I could possibly get away with something like Cliff Notes, I would do it. So I'm not going to read a huge book to tell me what that is. I went back to my coven and I said, hey, you know, I heard I've got to participate in an abortion, but I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means. And the guy said, oh, you're going to kill a baby in the womb. And again, you know, I was just flabbergasted. Use one of my dad's favorite words. I was flabbergasted. You know, and I was like, is that legal? He was like, oh, yeah. In the womb, legal. Out of the womb, murder. So I participated in my first assisted abortion when I was about 3 months prior to turning 15. We have, for every assisted abortion I ever participated in, we had a law firm. I did this in multiple cults. So multiple law firms that have us completely covered, where everything we're doing is above board. It's legal.
Wait a second. If I can interrupt you.
Sure.
Just, I got to wrap my head around this. You had a law firm covering you legally? I mean, I guess I'm just incredulous. You don't even have to answer that. That was more like a rhetorical, holy, you know what. Okay.
So this was a normal practice.
Everything that my coven did, greatly immoral and incredibly unethical, but a lot of it legal. You know, we had at one of the kiddie porn shoots that I was at when I was about 12, there was a girl there that was, I don't know how to say this, and it'd be nice. She was having sex with a lot of men, one right after another. She was about 11 years old, maybe 12. And she didn't speak a word of English. As far as I know, she didn't even speak any words that we speak in the United States. So she's not American. But she is having sex with one man after another. And then eventually, after so many men, she got to take a syringe in the arm. And I found out later she was doing heroin. Well, she OD'd while doing that. And she died. As she's dying, other men are still coming in that room. And after she's dead, there's still other men coming in that room. And then a guy that looks just like a cop, he's wearing he looks like a sheriff deputy, he's wearing a green uniform, and a gun belt, and it says the name of the county, I think. I don't remember the name of the county, but it was on his arm. He came in, threw her over his shoulder, and says, "I'll take care of this," and walks out the door with her, puts her in the back of his patrol car, and drives away. And to me, what that taught me is that there's no one I can tell. I certainly can't tell my parents because they'll stop me from doing this stuff. But the first abortion formed was because a guy that was a mayor in his town, it wasn't in my town, but a mayor in his town, was trying to pass a law, and he couldn't get it passed legally. So he contacted our coven to see if he could get an abortion done, to see if he could move whatever this law was, to move it in onto the books. You know, so it's like, okay, so you can't trust the mayor. You know, here it is. We just had a sheriff's deputy put a dead body of a girl in the back seat of his car and drive off with her. You can't trust law enforcement. You know, so, and then, yes, we did, and we had law firms that covered us to make sure that we did most things above board. So, you know, I just assumed that everybody knew what we were doing. You know,
wow.
Somehow we were, everything was almost like a secret, but out in the open.
Folks, I had run into some of this. Obviously, you just heard about a possibly a sheriff's deputy or a law enforcement officer. In my book, Stained by Blood, I had run into this back in 1987, and I talk about this in a parallel investigation in the murder of my uncle, running into the satanic pedophile ring, and here it is. I mean, and it's interesting because I got a couple of emails, or I saw a couple of bloggers say, "Oh, that was a bunch of, you know, BS." But here it is, our guest Zachary King, living it. This is horrific stuff. And you're right. Who do you turn to when everyone's apparently involved in this? Wow.
Yeah, and you know, and looking at it from a young child's perspective, I'm looking at it as, okay, there were members of teachers at my school were involved in my satanic coven. Deacons at my church are involved in my satanic coven. Members of the youth center, people that worked at the swimming pool, the town swimming pool, law enforcement, the mayor, it stretched. Like, to me, it was, there's nowhere I could go where I could say, hey, I kind of like to say something that's a secret, and I don't want to get in trouble, but this is what's going on. I had no recourse, no place I could go and say something like that. So not only am I am enjoying a lot of the things that I'm doing, but I'm also living with a lot of secrets that I don't want. I saw things that I didn't want to see. You know, I've still got memories of things I wish I didn't have.
How long ago was this? Give me like a year, decade, year kind of thing.
Well, I turned 10 in 1976.
Right.
I officially joined my coven when I was 13. That was my first coven. I joined my second coven when I was 18. I'm 50 now.
All right, so we're looking at the, interestingly enough, the same time frame as I write about in my book, but late 70s, early 80s, initially, anyway. Mr. King, before we close out the hour here in about 5 minutes, I just want to ask you, can we talk next hour at some point? I'd love to get your thoughts on Pizzagate. What's known as Pizzagate, which is a bad term in my view, on the satanic ritual abuse sacrifices and what I see taking place inside the powers, the halls of power in D.C. and elsewhere. Do you feel comfortable,
sure,
talking about that?
Okay, yeah, from your experience.
From an insider's experience. Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure because I'm kind of thinking in my head. Thinking ahead in my head. What do you think, folks? Pretty cool, right? Because there's so much blowback. We're getting a lot of I got to tell you, Mr. King, we're getting a lot of blowback from this. The more we investigate this kind of this satanic ritual abuse and child trafficking and the pedophilia, we are getting so much I'll just say blowback. But I guess that wouldn't surprise you, would it?
You know, one of the crazier things was when this story first, when Pizzagate, almost when they first broke, I mean, it'd probably been out for about a month. And, you know, and the first thing you heard was, well, fake news, this kind of stuff doesn't really happen. Those pedophile rings, that's a false story. You know, it's like SRA, that stuff doesn't really happen. And right around that same time, there was a child pornography and pedophile ring busted in Toronto. And they arrested 375 adult pedophiles and rescued 400 children from this ring. And it's like, really? So it's...
Yeah, fake, there's another one in Europe also. And you're not getting any coverage.
Right. And that's been going on. That one's been going on for over a year. And almost nobody over here has heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest shock is going to be when they find out that a bunch of all this stuff is connected.
Absolutely. When we,
yeah, that's right.
We're closing out this hour. We got about 2 minutes left. But before we go back to your testimony, because I want to get into the abortions, because I got some questions about that. So we'll do that after we come back from the break. There seems to be some kind of protection or shielding of these people in their evil activities, and even protection from the media, as you just pointed out from the Pizzagate. How much of that is due to the nature of what is they're involved in, protection from, you know, satanic spirits and demons, whatever you want to call them, versus how much of it is due to the people who are involved in their positions of power, or is it a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both, as well as it's, you know, I mentioned in another interview that, you know, when a Republican has a scandal, when a Republican is caught in a lie, for example, it's a big deal because he has morals. But when a Democrat is caught in a lie, well, they don't say they tell the truth. So when you catch them lying, it's like, well, this is what they do. So it doesn't seem to be as big of a scandal. And it seems to be where that if no matter what President Obama has done, no matter what it is, it doesn't seem to ever matter. But if any of our Republican presidents did even a tenth of what they have done on the bad scale, it would be all over the news, like as the worst possible thing that could ever happen.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, it's amazing to see the level of scrutiny and then the lack of scrutiny from the two sides. And the Democrats are notorious for this. You know, they'll be guilty of something, and they'll even blame their opponents for being guilty of what they're guilty for. But they never seem to have to take any accountability or responsibility. And it's laughable that we're gotten to a point where it's very laughable. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report with our guest, Zachary King, his website, allsaintsministry.org. He'll be with us in through the next hour, so stay with us. Don't go anywhere.